Moncrief on News Talk.
These days, people love identifying themselves through nationality, religion, gender, or sexuality. But how useful, how accurate are these labels? Alexander Douglas is the author of Against Identity: The Wisdom of Escaping the Self. Good afternoon, Alexander.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Now, the normal grammar in an interview like this is, I would say that, you know, I would give some sort of qualification and say that you're a professor of philosophy and that, but I'm not, because I'm not going to I'm not going to identify you in any way. There's just a chap called Alexander, and that, even that's an identity, I suppose.
The less identification, the better.
Right. What's the problem with identities?
Well, the subtitle of the book is The Wisdom of Escaping the Self, because I'm interested in philosophies that look particularly about ways that we identify ourselves. So we have identities, you know, this term is used in all sorts of ways in the modern world. Sometimes people identify you in particular ways. You know, we don't always know the ways that we're being identified, I guess. We're being tracked on these internet algorithms that presumably are identifying me by a profile that they've built out of purchases that I don't remember making. But we form a concept of ourself, and the philosophy that I'm interested in suggests that we do this partly because we have a very strong drive to preserve ourselves. Most of us, at least, have, you know, a self-preservation instinct. But to preserve yourself consciously, you have to have a notion of what it is that you fundamentally are, you know, which things are essential to you and which things can be changed. The danger of attaching yourself to a very clear and definite picture of what counts as you and what doesn't count as you is that you can get trapped in it. You can become too attached to a particular notion that you formed of who you are. You can end up feeling threatened by anything that might transform you, you know, anything that might change your ways of thinking about the world or about yourself. And you can sort of narrow your picture of things to kind of fit this idea of yourself that you're now so anxious to preserve.
Mm. Now, I suppose an example of that might be nationalists of various stripes who might say, I'm Irish, and their definition of Irish is when they look in the mirror, rather than because they don't want that definition threatened. Is that the kind of thing you might be speaking about?
Yeah, I think that's a good example. So, you know, obviously people have attachments to their nations. They have attachments to, you know, people who are culturally connected to them in different ways. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that as such. But when your notion of who you are, you know, this idea that's invested with the kind of force of your self-preservation instinct, includes reference to a nation, you then have to have a very clear idea of what that nation is.
Mm.
So if somebody identifies themselves as Irish, and, you know, what does it mean to be Irish? Well, that's a very contested thing, of course, you know, and a changing thing, right? I mean, there's just socio-political realities that are going to change the meaning of what it is to belong to a nation, regardless of whether we want it to or not. And so you can end up in this kind of quixotic endeavor to preserve a sense of a nation that maybe doesn't exist anymore, or at least can't exist, or is incompatible with, you know, the concept of a nation that other people are depending on. And that can only lead you into conflict and strife, and eventually just being out of step with the way that the world changes.
Now, it strikes me there's kind of two aspects to a person's identity, in that a certain amount of it they're given and a certain amount of it they choose.
That's certainly true. But the philosophers that I'm looking at in my book all share this interesting idea, which is that in order to form an idea of who you fundamentally are, it's never going to be enough to just look inwards, because when you look inwards, you find all of these traits, you know, all the traits that you're born with, your family connections, your social class, your ethnicity, your nationality, your tastes, you know, the various ways that you're made. But it's a choice to say that these things define you. You know, some people think that, I don't know, they're religion, say, or their occupation is very important to who they are. Other people say, no, you know, what I do for a living is just a detail about me. It's not important.
Mm.
You know, some people say, well, you know, my religion or the religion I was born into is just not that significant for defining who I am.
Mm.
So what we have to do to come up with this notion of ourself, this very definite notion of ourself, is actually look to others. There's something paradoxical about that, but it's only when you look to other people that you see kind of examples of what looks to you like a definite person. So even when we don't know that we're doing this, the thesis of the book is that we ultimately are, our identities are all kind of borrowed. If you ran us through plagiarism detection software, you know, we'd all flag up for misconduct. We just don't realize that we're doing it.
Now that's, and I can imagine people listening might find that a frightening prospect or just annoying, but that we're not who we think we are. We're kind of copies of people we admire. But then again, do we even admire them? Do we have really any free will in this? Because it might be a set of circumstances that led us to admire a person X and then to act like them.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that, you know, it can be particularly annoying when people have sort of deliberately set themselves the goal of escaping the influence of others, which, you know, is something that kind of lots of self-help gurus and others are always telling us to do. You know, don't be influenced by others, just be yourself. But of course, the irony is someone is telling you to do that, namely the self-help guru. I think the annoying thought to people is when they realize that their own impulse to rebel against certain influences is only the evidence of them falling under some other influence. The, you know, I quote the queer activist Quentin Crisp from the early 20th century, who said, the young always have the problem of trying to rebel and conform at the same time. And so the way they've solved that is by rebelling against their parents and conforming to each other.
Yes. Yeah. Does that mean then, though, I mean, and it's, I suppose it's not just self-help gurus, any advert you see on a billboard or here on the radio, CRTV is telling you to be yourself, be an individual by buying this product along with millions of other people, that our idea of ourselves is completely illusory. We haven't even made it up. We haven't had that much originality. We've just copied it off a few other people.
Yeah, I mean, that's the confronting idea. But I'm glad you raised that example because, you know, the fact that advertisers use this notion should be sufficient to make us very suspicious of it. Advertisers don't, you know, why would advertisers want everyone to find their true self if it weren't something that could be used for the purposes of manipulation, you know?
Mm.
Advertisers aren't in the business of just kind of altruistically helping you to find yourself, as you say. They want you to buy their product.
But it sounds like that Stephen Colbert thing of truthiness, you know, it sounds like it must be true, even though perhaps if you think about it, maybe there's nothing to it. So is there no such thing as individuality, really? It's just a kind of it's a screen we all put in front of ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to kind of exaggerate the point for the purposes of clickbait, but one of the thinkers who I look at, René Girard, says that directly, he says, individualism is a formidable lie. There's just something kind of built into our culture that's preventing us from acknowledging the extent to which we develop our sense of self, sense of ourselves by emulating others. But, you know, the idea of the book is that this doesn't have to be a confronting thought. It's only confronting if we remain attached to this idea that there has to be something that's truly and fundamentally me, that's me and me alone, and, you know, that I'm born with, or at least I'm kind of, I have the capacity to create ex nihilo. And, you know, there's something maybe prideful or narcissistic even about that thought when you really probe into it.
Yeah.
It could be liberating to think, okay, no, maybe I am just a sort of assembly of influences from those around me.
Though if you're a parent looking at your child, there's no parent who's ever looked at their child and said, ah, you know, they're okay. They're pretty much the same as all the rest of them.
No, but of course, you know, parents have to walk a very careful line between having hopes about what their child might become and just stamping a particular identity onto child. You know, of course, the people, you know, parenting, very complicated relation. It gets all mixed up with your own sense of yourself. And everybody knows that the traps that parents can fall into when they're actually trying to work out things about themselves through their children.
Mm, yeah. At the same time, are you saying there's nothing wrong with identity per se, just don't take it too seriously? Because we still need it. I still need to know that you're Alexander and not mix you up with somebody called Tom.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, our sense of ourself is what guides us in all of our judgments about things. Now, I think that it's dangerous to harden too much into our particular judgments for the very same reason. But you're right. You know, I mean, our values, our ways of weighing things up. I think that the sense that we develop of ourselves and the values that we end up endorsing, it's all kind of part of one connected process. And it's unavoidable that we should do that. And as you say, you know, everything from kind of professional relationships to friendships to love affairs is based on us having certain ideas about, you know, the identities of the people involved. So I think you're right to put it the way you have. It's more about not taking identities too seriously and not becoming sort of fixated on them, you know, being kind of open always to having your concept of yourself challenged and having it transformed, you know, to not feeling threatened by things that might change your notion of who you are.
Alexander, thanks a million for speaking with us today. There was Alexander Douglas there, author of Against Identity, The Wisdom of Escaping the Self.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.